And then I went, moved to Minneapolis, got myself a job at Stendahl Shoe Store in daytime. And then that supported my, I got $50 a week selling shoes downtown Minneapolis at 9th and Nicollet. And then at night, I would go to radio school. And on my $50, I was able to pay for my room and for the school and for my food.
Did you want to get into radio because you thought you could make money, or because you wanted to be a star, because you wanted to be famous, because you thought you could do a good job? Why'd you want?
Well, let me
do you even remember that?
Let me take you back when I was listening to radio programs in the 40s, in 46 and 47, because I would sit and stare at that big console radio.
Sure.
And I, you know, I would listen to Fibber McGee and Molly and Amos and Andy and all those and the great Gildersleeve. And that's, yes, radio was big and bigger than Hollywood to us. I mean, Hollywood obviously was still big. But so I have radio experiences back then. I have radio experience listening with my mother to Joe Louis fights. For some reason, she liked boxing, and I would listen to boxing with my mother. I mean, that just is a great, and including when my father ran for, he was deputy county treasurer of Grand Forks County, and then he ran for county treasurer, and I'm sitting listening to the radio and for the returns, and he ultimately lost. So that console radio, which I wish I had today, was a big deal.
Did it ever occur to you that that's what you would do?
You see, that was too early. No, I didn't.
Wouldn't until that guy in the college dorm room said,
"You've got a
golly,
great,
John, you've got a great voice.
Yeah,
you ought to be."
Yeah, well, I was somewhat enamored with radio, but it just didn't put two and two together on how I would get there. So I understand how big radio was, and in some ways is more needed now than for entertainment. It certainly has changed down through the years.
Well, how did you actually start? When did you get your first, when did you enter? When did you stop selling shoes and start being on the radio?
So then, as I said, I was in Brown Institute in Minneapolis. It was a 9-month course. I had gone to KILO in Grand Forks, North Dakota, to say, I'm thinking about going to radio school, and I don't know whether I should or not, and you have an opening. I'd like to audition for that job. I'll let you decide whether you want to hire me or whether I should go to radio school. And he listened to my tape, and he says, I think you ought to go to radio school. But they were also the ones who came calling after I was 8 months into the program at Brown in Minneapolis. And they said, send us a tape now. We have an opening. And I sent them a tape. So I actually left Brown in Minneapolis, and I went to KILO in Grand Forks.
But it's curious that you had that experience, I think. It's even more telling for me that you dropped out.
No, I didn't drop out.
I thought
I got a job early and I left. That's not dropping out.
I'm sorry.
That's not dropping out. No, I didn't drop out at all.
Okay.
And for me, it was a very good experience. If for nothing else, the pronunciation of words. And I realize that most people, they're sloppy in the way they speak, sloppy in their pronunciation of words. And I drew from that. And then the delivery of commercials. My style was then pretty slow and all, and they would encourage me to speak faster and with a little more energy. And I was so taken with those instructors. They'd been former broadcasters in Minneapolis. Jimmy Valentine, he would teach on Friday nights, and you didn't have to go Friday nights. And he had been a big star. And to be able to sit and listen and talk to these giants in the broadcast business about radio, I could not believe it. You see, radio, you asked earlier about why did I want to be in it. I didn't have a choice because I was born with the spirit to speak. I remember in my church at 6 years old, we would memorize our Christmas pieces, as they called them, and I would stand on stage and I would deliver that. And I can remember to this day my body getting into it and speaking as loud as I could and projecting to the audience. And I knew I was doing something good. And I knew then afterward that was affirmed by people that would come up to me. Well, that was very good, Lowell. I grew up being Lowell. Mm-hmm. And they would say, that was good. So I knew I was doing something good in a speaking capacity at 6 years old.
That's never gone away, has it?
No, it hasn't.
Every time you do it and you've got an audience, even if it's only one, and somebody says that's good, that's a great feeling.
Right. So you can see this little boy who started preaching to the chickens, and then when he gets on stage in a church at 6 years old, you begin to draw a line here. Well, this young man is probably going to be in some performance capacity. And I didn't know which way it was going to be. Then I was interested in football and could care less, and all played baseball and collecting baseball cards. I was in speech contests. A lady in the church wanted me to be in speech contests for the Women's Temperance Christian Union, speaking
Wow.
about the evils of alcohol, and we would memorize speeches, and then you'd get medals for that. So, see, I was a performer in that, and I still didn't know about performing in radio. But it wasn't then until Chuck Ewan said, and I think this is an important point, because when we see children today or see talent today, you never know when you've added a nurturing word to that young person. You know what? You ought to do something, and that may be all it is. And you don't even know if they really took it in. It could be the life-changing experience. So would I have gotten into radio eventually? Probably so. But I became so enamored about radio. I had a hard time driving past a radio station without having to be in that radio studio and just standing there watching the performers. I mean, that was it. And I also thought that everybody in the world knew what they wanted to do when they were born and gone to school, or say graduated from high school or college. And then it was many, many years later, I realized people went to college and they still didn't know what they wanted to be. I knew I was going to be something in a performance, and then when radio got into my brain, that was it. I knew it. And to me, to this very day, it's an absolute blessing that I knew. I went to trade school. I didn't have to go hunting for my trade. I went to trade school. Not everybody goes to college. Not everybody needs to go to college. I would encourage people to go to college, but those who don't, if you're still looking for that trade, I kind of feel sorry for you. Eventually, everybody finds their place in life. But I had it.
Do you know anybody else? Your brother, you said, was an educator from...
From birth.
Yeah, from... Same kind of thing?
Exactly.
And do you think that's just serendipity? Or
yes.
Do you think it's something genetic in the
no.
Freddie family?
No.
Or what?
No, there weren't any broadcasters, and there weren't any educators.
No, that knowledge that you know what you're going to do
yeah.
at a very young age.
Right, and they were all farmers, you know. That was just a lucky gene. That's all that was, you know, I believe. My mother was a great Sunday school teacher. She had the teaching aspect to her, which my brother probably inherited. But beyond that, knowing what we wanted to do is kind of unusual. He knew when he was six. I did, too.
You ever done anything to your voice?
No. No. People would say to me, you know, you've been to radio school. He says, how did you get that voice? Well,
opened your mouth.
I just started talking. That's all I did. You know, did they give you that voice in radio? No, they didn't give me that voice in radio. I would laugh when I would ask that question.
Right? You have what's called a broad America accent.
Yeah, and I never
can't tell where they're from.
And I never got that lilt of Minnesota and North Dakota, because up there they talk like this. Mm-hmm. They have that little lilt, and it's kind of pretty, actually, particularly women, I think. But they will talk like this, and they will talk, and da-da-da-da-da, and I heard all of that.
Did it ever occur to you that the primary person, I suppose, that's always held up as the example of that is Johnny Carson, who is from the same general geographic area
in Nebraska,
that we're talking
right.
about?
Right. You mean your question was...
Yeah, about that broad America accent.
Yeah,
about that
I think
thing
so.
That
you know, Tom
people
Bro-
just grow up with.
Tom Brokaw as well. You know, uh-huh. He came out of South Dakota.
Right.
And so we have that. But it doesn't mean you have to live there. But a lot of broadcasters that you will hear on the air today will say, I had to lose my accent. I had an Eastern accent, but I had to lose it. So they had to teach themselves the broad American accent, I guess we call mm-hmm. it, which many of us did not.
I'd have been smart enough or not to do that.
To have learned
it. Yeah, to unlearn
it. Unlearn it, right. Well, I suppose if you want a job bad enough and somebody says your Eastern accent is standing in the way, maybe if you really wanted that bad enough, you would do it. But I didn't have any of those issues.